This week on the Finding Impact podcast, we're talking about social enterprise mergers, taking Pollinate Energy in India and Empower Generation in Nepal as a case study, and showing how they can leverage economies of scale and maximize impact with Sita Adhikari and Alexi Sella of Pollinate Group.
FindingImpact.com. FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.
Hey everyone, my name is Andy Narricot and I'm the founder of Finding Impact, the show with an audience of real social entrepreneurs serving the base of the pyramid and who want to learn from people who've done it before, tried and failed a few times, got some scars and want to pass those on to all you lot. So this is the second in a three-part series in partnership with the Global Distributors Collective on last mile distribution. And what an honor it is to be creating content with such an amazing team at GDC. I'm bringing you unique content on businesses creating huge impact at the base of the pyramid. So for those of you who don't know, the Global Distributive Collective is a collective of over 140 last mile distribution companies around the world. And GDC supports distributors to help them reach underserved customers with life-changing products. You know, the ones like solar lights, clean cook stoves, water filters, sanitation, nutrition products, etc. GDC is another great example, I think, of systems alliance, you know, that we've talked about before, where organizations come together to tackle systemic challenges. So you'll see that GDC has a couple of main activities. One, it's to provide services to help distributors save time and money, you know, and adopt best practices, facilitate new partnerships, that sort of thing. And the second thing is to work to build a collective voice and raise the profile of last mile distributors, working with key stakeholders to support a better sector. So this is a really great example of a systems alliance that you know, every sector needs. The GDC is hosted by our friends at Practical Action, with implementing partners Hystra and the BOP Innovation Center. So I encourage you to go and check out more. globaldistributorscollective.org is their website. So check it out. So this whole series aims to provide some unique insights into some of the challenges and pivots that these companies have. So each episode will take one company from the Global Distributors Collective who have faced a particular challenge and have overcome it. So, and with admirable style, as you remember from the last episode. So incredible stories we're sharing and insights. And we'll be bringing you some insight and analysis at the end of each episode as well from a member of the GDC team. So make sure you stick around for that. So this episode is with Sita Adhikari and Alexi Sella of Pollinate Group. They operate in India and Nepal. And we talk about why they were looking to merge with an organization in the first place. So, and you know, how they came into contact with each other, how they got to know each other's and organizations and see if they were a good fit. We cover the whole process in detail. You know, the actual merger as it went through with lawyers and brand and all those sort of things. We confront the whole thing. We talk about their fears going into this. And at the end, they reflect and give you the key pieces of advice they have for others contemplating this merger. As the African proverb said, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So it couldn't be more relevant. Okay, so let's get straight into the interview. Ladies and gents, I give you Sita Adhikari and Alexi Sella of Pollinate Group. Hi, everyone. I've got Alexi Sella here and Sita Adhikari, and we're going to do an interview about the merger they carried out in 2018, or over the course of 2018, about why they decided to do it, how they did it, and we're going to try and draw out some really important lessons to share with everyone listening, so it can help them think through the pros and cons. So Sita is the co-founder of Empower Generation, which sells life-changing products like solar products, solar lanterns in rural Nepali communities through women entrepreneurs. And Alexi is the co-founder of Pollinate Energy, which serves urban families with life-changing products through a sales network which they recruit and train from disadvantaged backgrounds. So I'm really pleased to have them both on the show. So welcome, Alexi.
Thank you for having me, Andy.
And welcome, Sita.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Pleasure. Well, thank you both for the time across multiple time zones. First off, Alexi, maybe give us some context. We're going to ask you both this question. So Alexi, first you. Could you give us an intro? Well, did I give you the right introduction for Pollinate Energy? And can you tell us, you know, what the business model was like before the merger?
Yeah, you did. And so before the merger, we were about 5 years into our business in India. I mean, a very strong focus on serving families in city slums. So migrants who moved in from villages looking for work and had no access to electricity or other services. So that was our focus, finding people in the city who could service these communities and provide long-lasting solutions that would help them move out of poverty.
Brilliant. Sita, maybe you can go next.
Yeah, before the merger, we, find women entrepreneurs from the community, rural community women, and bring them in our network and support and train them to become like grow them as an entrepreneur and really distribute really remote areas of Nepal, distribute clean energy product, mainly solar lantern, to the remote community of Nepal.
Okay, so one in India, quite urban focused, another in Nepal, quite rural focused with women entrepreneurs. So I can see a lot of similarities. Maybe Sita, you could begin to tell us what encouraged you to start looking for partnership opportunities for collaboration with other last mile distributors.
Yeah, we were really looking for scale up. We were in 2017, up to 2017, we were like really success to bring a lot of women in our network and really grow them as like through business, our business model in their leadership stage. And we saw a lot of potentiality to empower a lot of rural women and then distribute clean energy product in many districts, rural districts in Nepal. And we saw there is a great opportunity for the women, rural women, as well as they get a lot of opportunity to learn in business skills and have a greater position in their community and have their respect and on income and all those. And then at the same time, we were like we need a lot of resource to scale up that in terms of like funding. And then also we need a technology to really make it successful, like have a robust kind of management system. That what we were looking for in other side. So in this space, like we were looking for the partnership and partnership to really on our scale up.
So looking to scale up the model through partnership, funding was an ongoing challenge, and I think everyone can relate with that, just trying to reach scale. Okay, so Alexei, maybe you can then go, what was the context? Why were you exploring opportunities for collaboration at that stage?
Yeah, I think the funding piece was a big part of our reason for starting to explore opportunities. I guess I was in a stage of frustration. On one hand, at the sector in last mile distribution, and a lot of new companies coming up who we were not very good at working with each other, to be honest, and finding ways to support one another to grow. And a lot of that came from a sense of competition in the funding space, and so it just felt counterproductive to compete for funding when we weren't actually competing on the ground. And the other source of frustration for us at Pollinate was, we actually were experiencing a really significant barrier to scale, which was at recruiting our pollinator team, the ones who go door to door and do sales in slums. There was a huge stigma associated with working in those slums. We had people join and churn out pretty quickly, but the people from the slum communities were too intimidated to take on the role themselves because it required them to travel around the city. And I also had a bit of a gut sense that really the women in these communities are the ones who run the households, and they understand what products their families need, but we couldn't access them in a way that really incentivized them to give us the right kind of information and help us understand what products were going to move and were of value. And so, you know, we tried for a couple of years to bring more women into our team, and we're still hitting a lot of walls. And so that kind of led me to start to look at partnerships, because I just knew there were other players out there who had been successful at engaging women and developing them as professional sales people and business leaders. And we were struggling with that.
It's amazing that you're looking outward for partnership and collaboration rather than ongoing competition, which I think is brilliant, commendable. So how did you reach out? I mean, did you have an existing network of people in last mile distribution companies, and where did that come from? And was there a facilitation bringing you all together? Maybe Alexi, you can tell me how you connected with others.
Yeah, so we did. We did the organizations that we worked through the merger process with, we were connected by the Miller Center out of Santa Clara University in the US, and we had all been through their accelerator program. And it was a group of women-led organizations who we weren't actually all on the program together. There were different, we were in different graduating years, but there was a common support network, I guess, in the Miller Center. And we came to know of each other's work through that, and I guess we're sort of a little surprised in as to how similar our models were, and how the challenges we were facing were quite similar, and that maybe we would be better off trying to solve them together rather than doing that independently.
Mm. So you had this external organization bringing you together already. So, you know, a lesson for others is to look for existing networks that you're part of, and then, you know, because you've got context together. So, okay, you identified a few others. Now, how did you develop? What was the next steps? How did you start those conversations and build trust between other organizations, share information, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think a really important part of the process right at the beginning was that it genuinely came from us as the CEOs. So we self-identified that there was an opportunity for greater collaboration, and that allowed us to come to the table together and be very honest with one another. And one of the first ground rules we set down was a principle of genuinely sharing strengths and weaknesses of our organization, and also of ourselves as leaders, and where we felt we needed to develop, and what were the things we were struggling with. And that really helped us find quite quickly some complementary areas to focus on. We started off with, you know, weekly phone calls, and that went over a period of about 6 or 7 months. We had a spreadsheet that we sent out where everyone had to fill in the status of the different, you know, portfolios of our businesses. So what did our technology systems look like? What did our fundraising capacity look like? What did our ground model look like? And doing a bit of a self-analysis to identify where we were different and where we were maybe the same. And as we went through that process, we then started to bring in our board members and help them get on board with the process, and I guess give us, you know, a tick of approval to keep going with the conversation. And, you know, those phone calls really helped us kind of tease out all elements of the businesses and figure out whether this would make sense. And the interesting thing is that at the beginning of the process, the four of us all committed to considering what a four-way merger would look like. And I think that's a little unconventional. And most things about how we did this really are not how the commercial sector would look at mergers. But we basically recognized that if we didn't shoot for the stars, like, we were never going to get a solution that was going to be very, very powerful. And so we really kept that mantra there the whole time to try and figure out how this would work, how we could bring together all these companies. And in the end, only Pollinate Energy and Empower Generation merged. But I think everyone through that process learned a lot, gained a lot of value from the conversations with the other partners in the sector. And, you know, we're continuing to partner with those other organizations today.
So you were looking for a four-way merger to begin with. Is that why four? Is that because it were just four organizations that had expressed interest, or you just thought that was an ideal number?
Yeah, not that we thought it was an ideal number. Yeah, four had expressed genuine interest in thinking through the process. And when I say genuine, like, had come to the table and said, I'm willing to, you know, forsake, I'm willing to let go of things like maybe brand, maybe my role, maybe my specific strategy for the sake of more impact and more scale. And there were other organizations we had spoken to in the sector who were not quite at that point. And so it was the group that were ready. We were already in that point of time to have that conversation. And that's why it started with that group of four.
Fantastic. And all women-led organizations. And I'm not, I mean, I'm not going to offer any hypothesis here, but maybe, you know, maybe this is a male-female thing, because I know that some, you know, maybe men are more protective over there, you know, what they have, and, you know, women are more collaborative, but I'm not going to go there. That's another conversation.
It's an interesting part of it.
So Alexi, maybe just going on a bit further, maybe sort of next steps in that merger, how did you sort of get to the stage where the two of you, Pollinate and Empower, were the right fit organizations to go and actually do the merger?
Yeah, so I guess during the process, we set ourselves two critical deadlines. The first was a point at which we basically developed a joint business deck, which required, you know, financial modeling and strategic planning together to figure out how this company would look in the future. And then if we got through that decision point and everyone was still on board, we took the next step of going deeper into due diligence on every partner and taking site visits into the field. And so we all got to that first decision point and everyone decided they were still on board and still interested, and everyone's board agreed that it looked like a good opportunity. And it was really that next phase of the deeper diligence and the site visits that got us to the point where we decided that, you know, the two of us were going to come together. I really feel that the moment when I knew that this was something that we could achieve was when I walked in the door in Sita's office in Chitwan in Nepal, and I met her and the team, and I felt instantly at home. And it's funny how after all of this process of like business exploration and financial modeling and like audit reviews and diligence, at the end it kind of came down to a gut feeling that this was going to work. And I placed a lot of value on that, because when we were going through the merger process and having advisors tell us what to do, a lot of them were saying that the number one cause of failure in mergers is company culture and not understanding the culture of the two companies and how they were going to come together. And so, you know, when I walked in the door and felt like this team was the same, you know, felt the same as my team, had the same willingness to learn and curiosity about our model, and you know, really understood what they were strong at, they understood what they were weak at, they were humble about what they were doing, but very passionate. It felt like the right match. And I knew that for two organizations where, you know, we didn't have a lot of resources, we didn't have big funders coming on to support this because it was very new, no one had done it before, and it was very risky. I knew that we would need the teams to have a lot of goodwill to work with one another and just be able to get stuck in and get the job done. And I think that was a good decision to make, having now gone through the process, like just really paying attention to who the people are on the ground and whether it's going to be possible with that team.
I mean, this is brilliant because, you know, it's such an overlooked thing. People are maybe more analytical and rely on data and you know, the analysis, but actually you're saying, and I agree with you, you know, it's not just using your head, it's using your heart as well. You've got to feel comfortable with the other people, the people behind the business. And maybe you even bring that insight, or that category of that criteria for merger with another organization even further forward, you know, people that you get on with. And do you like what they're doing already? Maybe Sita, if I could ask you, what from your perspective, you know, do you remember that time when Alexi walked into the office, and what did you feel? And maybe you know, some of the other things that you learned through these early collaborative conversations with possible other mergers.
Yeah, I remember that when I visited India myself and Anya in India, and with other partners as well, that four representative was also there. And I found that Pollinate Energy is the one like must that we are aligned with. And then, like Alexi said, like it's, I feel as home, and the team was like very open and welcoming, and everything like what we are doing is quite similar than other company had. So I actually like discussed with Anya at that time, maybe this is the company that we are going to collaborate than other company, because I wasn't very like involved in day-to-day phone call and things like that. That was Anya was leading. But I mean, what I understand when my visit with Pollinating Edge and other companies in India, like this is the company what I want to collaborate. And then the same like when Alex visited in Nepal, like we had a really good conversation, good time with Alexi, and she was really open and welcoming and understanding, and then like very interested to learn, which was like really good sign for me to go with this merger, really feel like encouraged. And then it's something like a very curious and excited moment for me as well.
Brilliant. I mean, but you know, there's no doubt some doubts in both your minds when you're going into this as well. So Sita, maybe what were some of the fears that you were thinking of before, you know, going into this? How did you understand those fears and confront those and, you know, mitigate them?
Yeah, there was like a couple of fear that definitely I had. So the most like the biggest fear was in my mind was like I am like really strong background of women empowerment. So like I started these businesses to empower women actually through the business model. So I was really like worried about whether this my strong belief and vision, I have to sacrifice somehow. And I didn't like I was like had some feeling that I could like sacrifice this identity that I am from, like women empowerment, strong women empowerment background. So maybe I have to lose somewhere. Like I like said, like we have to be open to sacrifice our, like, you know, the positions or like some ideas or something like that. So maybe that was one like fear, that Pollinate Energy for me in that time was not seen like really dedicated for only for women empowerment. There was like a lot of other things, and I had not like good understanding on those sectors, how much they will be open to carry that those ideas and things like that. That was my fear. And then another is like maybe we can keep like doing these things in Nepal, and then and whether we will have that like the freedom to do something, some similarities and some like differences, and whether we respect that each other or not. So that was my like biggest fear. And then as long with that, like there was a lot of other administrative things, whether it will work. It's like the governmental things will work in this merger or not. Like the product, how we will like bring all the product that we are thinking about. It was all like, you know, confusing and challenging things for me to think about. And the cultural barrier was another thing. Like, India has different culture than Nepal. And the company culture was like, we are too focused on women empowerment, and like all the folks, like majority folks are women. And that was not similar in India with Pollinating Energy. So that was my fear, like how we will fit with the company culture, like the women empowerment and women like working women together and like not having that focus in another company.
Okay. Yeah, so quite a few fears there. And obviously self-awareness is your biggest ally here. So if you understand your fears, you can sort of make conscious effort to address them through conversation or whatever. Maybe Alexei, maybe your turn. What challenges did you foresee? What fears did you have going into this?
Yeah, so I think like Sita, I guess just fear of the unknown or the other side. But I think what was so powerful in Sita, and actually what made this really easy, was that Sita very directly told me those fears on the first call.
Brilliant.
It's like, I'm extremely worried that you're not going to do this, and that, you know, I'm not going to be able to get support from the Indian team. And once it's voiced, it's very easy to deal with. And so knowing where Sita was at, I mean, that was my biggest fear. And until we had that conversation, I just wasn't exactly sure how committed she was. And then knowing what she was worried about helped me kind of get on the same page. I think the fears that I had were more also around like the team, whether the team would embrace this. So I was definitely scared of telling my staff when we were really getting to the point of having to inform them about what was coming up and what that change might look like. And any kind of change process is difficult to manage. And I was a little worried that they were going to think I was crazy. And why was I thinking about this? But in reality, they really embraced the opportunity and they were so excited about us going into a new country and having a new team to work with, and that team who had a skill that they all knew that I was trying to get them to progress, but they just didn't know how to move forward. So they really saw the value very quickly in Empower Generation coming on. The other sticking point I'd say was at the board level, which is pretty common in these processes, because we have, we had two boards coming together across Australia and the US, many of whom who had been, founding directors or directors who'd been there for a very long time, and wanted to protect their company's future and the legacy of their company, which is only natural. The one sticking point we did get to was actually when the lawyers were a little too involved and really trying to like fence that out. And the argument from the US legal team was that we should just build through an MOU. And that terrified me because I knew that, an MOU is not binding. It really doesn't lock us into a future together. It just meant that we would be taking all the risk of merging with this organization, taking on a lot of the funding risk and the implementation risk, and not really seeing that return in risk from the other side. So we got to such a sticking point. It was one of those moments where we're kind of going through the contract and there's all these little words and things that people weren't agreeing on. And in the end, ultimately the fear from the US company side was that they would give the membership, they would give the Australian company membership in the US charity, which would effectively merge them. And then they were worried that we would not bring the US directors onto the global board, because that was kind of how they got their leverage point. And so then we put our necks on the line and we just gave them the opportunity to step into the directorship first. So by being, we were in a slightly higher power position in that we were kind of leading through the implementation process of the merger. And I think just standing up and saying, okay, we understand that you're nervous about this, so we're going to move first. Come onto our board and then you can sign off on this membership agreement. And in the end, we didn't even need a contract. So it's kind of an interesting lesson, I think, in how much you can get stuck in that those divisive points in negotiations, and that just stepping back and recognizing, why someone is worried and whether there's another way to solve that worry that doesn't like force everyone down this spiral of contract negotiation when you really don't need to be there.
Yeah, so some really good lessons in facilitation or like negotiation. Did you have any help with that external facilitator?
Yeah, I mean, at that point we didn't. At that point we were in a position of negotiating between two companies with legal teams. But throughout the process of the conversations between the four companies and the site visits, we did have a facilitator. Who was exceptional. She joined us on every phone call and then joined us in San Francisco for a 5-day roundtable meet, which was the final decision-making process. And she was very necessary. So we had that advice early on that the concept was very innovative to have four companies together, but it's also a bit of a recipe for disaster, maybe. And having an impartial facilitator there who is witnessing the process, who, does not have an objective themselves to merge, or doesn't, is not feeling the need of a company behind them to merge or not merge, but could be our lifeline or our the person we call if there is like a challenging point in negotiation. That was very helpful. And I would say even if companies were looking just with a partnership between two companies, if you're going for this level of partnership where it is incredibly high risk and high reward, that having that facilitation is crucial, because at some point you always need to go out and get another opinion. And if they've been along on the journey with you, they're just going to be a lot more informed when they're providing that opinion.
Yeah, great. So the importance of an objective ally or, you know, rationality into the conversation. Really, really helpful. Maybe we can use that to as a segue into the actual process of the merger. You know, you obviously have different legal structures, maybe different geographic locations, jurisdictions, and then back-end systems as well. So how did that practically all work?
Yeah, we did. So we had, you know, Empower Generation was in the US and Nepal, and Pollinate Energy was in Australia and India. And in India, we have two companies, and in Nepal, we're setting up another company. So there was a lot of legal things to consider and compliance issues. We managed to get through most of that in the first phase. So the first January to March of 2018 was really focused on the board level negotiation and a clear path forward for good governance and compliance, which was just fundamental, we thought. Because if we set our teams up in a position where, you know, on day one of the merger, we had the right structure in place, then it would be easier to implement all of the changes. So that was really the initial focus. And in the end, the legal transaction side of it was very simple. It was just the Australian charity becoming a member, the sole member of the US charity. So the Australian board is kind of the parent board of this family or group of companies. And, you know, the legalities of it was really hanging up our earlier conversations. That once we got through all of the kind of thinking of how we were going to come together and what the value was going to be for both sides, the final legal move became very simple. So once we had done that and the boards had you know, signed off on that membership and the directorship changes had been made, we moved into the next phase. And then we decided to focus the first 90 days of merging on systems and finance in Nepal. So the Nepal team, prior to joining our company, were on a very manual sales operation system. They didn't have any online accounting or management of sales. And we just could not, we couldn't really help because we couldn't see what was going on. It was, you know, we're getting data too late to be able to actually support the team and help them grow. And so we saw that as like the next step that we needed to take, so that Nepal could be on the same operating systems as India and we could all kind of speak the same language internally. And that, you know, to be honest, we got a lot done in that 90 days, but I'd say that we're really only now closing out the longer term issues that we uncovered in that process, because we actually had to modify some of our technology systems that we were used to in India. We operate in cities in India. It's very high connectivity levels. There's a lot of internet available. A lot of people have smartphones, so we use a lot of technology. And that was not the case in Nepal. They're in remote villages without smartphones or working phones. So we did have to make a bunch of changes there. But I think we were right to start there. And then the next phase, the next 90-day phase, we focused on people and culture, like training and impact. And that was really where we started to bring Nepal's expertise on women empowerment and development of entrepreneurs into India. They kind of came and did a roadshow tour of all of our cities in India and ran training programs with our existing team. And actually in that time, we identified an immediate opportunity to replicate the Nepal model in the slums of India. So where previously we were just recruiting and training pollinators and sending them into the slums, you know, a network of 20 slums that was their market area. We now actually also identify women from those communities as entrepreneurs, and we've helped those women, you know, get started at home so that they can take the first step of joining our team in a very low risk, low barrier to entry way. They have their own product line. And once they're starting to sell and they show an interest in doing more, that's when we can start to work with them to lift them up the empowerment ladder and, you know, develop them to a point where they can take on a full-time sales role, or they can run their own business, or they have a skill that they can take elsewhere to earn greater incomes. So that was like, that I think was a really interesting phase of the merger where we really started to kind of merge our impact models on the ground. And then the final 90 days, the end of 2018, I actually left free. And I think that was a good move because we had a lot of loops to close. And so we had that 90-day period then to just address whatever we needed to get done that wasn't quite fixed or connected, or, you know, something we hadn't identified at the beginning of the project. And that just meant that we could actually get through everything we needed to in a really timely way, and then start the new year afresh as a merged company, which is where we're at now. with our joint, you know, a joint strategy where we have teams working across both countries in the same kinds of functional areas and working together to achieve our greater impact goals.
Yeah, so really important. I love that 90-day chunks, and you set those as sort of the timetable for the merger, and don't let it just run, but you have a very strict structured timetable for how this is all going to happen. And I'd just like to briefly touch on the whole branding issue, because you have two brands and there's so many options. You create a new one, you eliminate both, you keep one. How did you approach that between the two organizations?
Yeah, so we made a conscious decision to leave branding until the end. And it was an interesting decision because it was definitely the first question we got from everyone we were telling that we were merging. You know, which brand's staying and why? And we sort of said, look, we don't want to make that decision right now because it's the kind of thing that people are most emotionally attached to. And we don't actually really know, you know, we need to kind of work together and understand what we look like on the inside before we can go through a rebranding process. And so that has been the last 3 months, early stage of 2019, and we've just launched our new brand, which is Pollinate Group, internationally. But interestingly, we also decided to rename our Indian entity. So the Nepal local company has its own name, Kalpa Vriksha, which means wishing tree, which is a very aspirational concept for the women who work in the network and the customers. And Pollinate in India just wasn't resonating. It's not a word that was easy to pronounce. People didn't understand the concept around pollination. And so we just rebranded our Indian entity to Asha Kiran, which means ray of hope. And again, a very aspirational brand for the communities we serve and the people who are joining our sales team there. So definitely, something we decided to do at the end of the process. And I think while it was a little difficult throughout the merger to have two brands, it wasn't that difficult. I mean, we just kind of had to tell everyone to wait until we were ready to come out with the new brand. And we really did it at a time when we all felt like it was the right time and we had the headspace we needed to rethink what that brand is and what it looked like and why, because it is a very challenging process to take a company through a rebrand and doing it whilst you're merging would be extra difficult.
Mm. Yeah, but that made me think just so helpful to have that local brand which has remained untouched in Nepal, and then you just use that opportunity to rebrand as a good time as any to in India. That's really helpful. So moving on quickly, just looking at the time, Sita, maybe if I can bring you in here, what do you think, if you kind of reflect now on the impact of the merger, what are your thoughts around that of, you know, finally, what is, after all this is nearly complete, what the final impact has been of this merger?
I would say it really bring us a great opportunity for the team and great opportunity for all, like, you know, the last mile customers in India and Nepal, and then our network. So if I say from the impact point of view, like now we have, merging with Pollinate Energy, now we have greater system, very robust system to on sales, and then also data management system and like really make it happen in the ground. So bigger focus on sales. Once we have good sales, then we have a lot of customers impact, and then also our network get a lot of income, which is huge, like which makes huge difference with our team. So I see that's like a lot of movement happening after this merger, like movement in the sense of, like, you know, the very fast movement on sales and technology, like adopting technology, and people are really motivated to work and very like live. It's give the lives in our company through Pollinate, like merging through Pollinate Energy. And then from the team, like they have now like feeling it's like uproar, like, you know, the get chance to learn from other countries' expertise, and then they also have chance to share their expertise to other countries, which is like greater chance for the people who are with us. So that is like bigger pictures that I can see from the merger. And then from like the project aspects, like we have now as a local company CEO, I am like more confident with the funding and the futures of the company. So I have like freedom to think about our scale up. Like I can think about like bigger pictures of our company and then the scale up, like how, where we there is no barrier of funding and technology, which gives me a lot of encouragement and hope about the company. And then the other like bigger satisfaction from my side is I am now like I have like greater space to implement our model, adopt our model to empower more women in the networks, not only India, not only Nepal, but India as well. Like we have greater platform to work on that vision.
Yeah. So huge opportunity there. Great to reflect on that final impact. Alexei, what do you think in terms, you know, just looking back, what has this meant for you?
I think Sita mentioned that this has like breathed life into the company. And I have to, you know, now looking back at where we've come up until now, I really think that that's the biggest impact because, you know, definitely we wanted to find a way to bring women into the front and center of our model. And we have done that. And we have an opportunity now to scale that out across India with Sita's leadership. We were trying to, you know, slow down or stop the competition in funding and instead leverage our collaboration to raise more funds because we have great track records and we need to scale these solutions. And we have been successful there as well. But I think that the internal shift that I've seen in our team in India and also the Nepal team, now having known them for about 18 months personally, it's just remarkable. I think it's, you know, you go through a merger and there is just such a, there's forced change everywhere. And it really challenged all of the assumptions we had in our business model. I think when you start up a new business in social impact, you're usually chasing one kind of model very intensively, which is a good approach to really get it right. But we were definitely at a point where we needed to pivot and we needed to think differently about how we do things on the ground, like how we recruit, why we recruit that person, how we train them, like why we train them that way, what products we sell. And sometimes that kind of change can be really overwhelming. But I think in the context of the merger, it just allowed us to segment it down, focus on different areas of the business that we needed to. And now we've got this great team across India and Nepal who are so used to that kind of behavior that they've sort of got that breath of fresh air in how they operate every day and are much more collaborative and open-minded about the decisions we make and how we can improve what we're doing, really for the sake of, you know, the communities that we work in. So I think that's definitely the biggest takeaway for me.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, you've got a ready audience here. People are intrigued with this merger, maybe considering it themselves for their own organizations. Do you have one or two overarching lessons that you'd like to pass on of things that you would advise others going into considering mergers and going through a merger?
Yeah, I think the top two for me, one is trust and authenticity between the leadership. It's very important that the leaders are on the same page, understand where they're trying to go through the partnership, and then constantly rechecking in on that. You know, through the process, there's always going to be sticking points, and you just need to be open about what you're worried about, what you think isn't working for you, and how we, and that'll help kind of move forward to the next phase. And I think the other big one for me, I had this piece of advice from a friend who actually worked in M&A in the US, and his advice was, you know, in a merger, you're in such a state of flux, you just need to run as fast as you can and don't paralyze over every decision. Otherwise, you will never get anywhere. And so that's what helped me frame out this, you know, the annual plan of 90-day programs where each 90 days we're focusing on a different part of the business. And I think that is really what helped us be successful because it would have been quite easy to just merge and then spend a long time trying to figure out what to do. And at some point, you just have to kind of bite the bullet and run with it. And it was a very, very good piece of advice and really helped us get over a lot of those change moments quickly, so we weren't just lost in the detail.
Mm-hmm. So radical openness and honesty between CEOs and sharing knowledge, and then you know, the run as fast as you can and don't analyze every single move. And I just like to, what something I note here as well is you're constantly talking about advice you've received, but I think it's a huge, you know, it's an advantage that so many people, I think, overlook, that, you know, be willing to open your ear to others and ask for advice and get some of those lessons learned from others. Brilliant. So Sita, can you maybe highlight one or two lessons you would like to pass on to the community of others who are thinking about mergers?
Yeah, I agree all the point with Alexi, and I have some little more. Like, yes, openly honest and openness is very important, but like, in when you are opening, say your concern, like it's in front, it helped to come up with a solution very, very soon. Then, like, you know, just panic yourself whether it will be happen or not, kind of things. But it's to be upfront, it's really helpful to go forward. And then the other is what I found really helpful is engage with the team, like not only the leaders, with engage with the leaders of the companies, but like engage with both like ground level team. So it help you a lot to understand the company cultures, which give you a lot to input on how you have to proceed in future. And then I think the bigger lesson learned is agree with the bigger pictures of the company. What is your goal or like impact that you wanted to achieve? And then the solution will come. Like it is like the process. So don't worry about too much on process, but agree on bigger pictures if you wanted to like thinking about merger with other company or partnering with other company.
Again, you know, really, really great lessons. We're out of time now. I'm really sorry. We could talk for hours on this, and I think maybe others can reach out to you, or, you know, to read some of the materials that we'll link up in the show notes. But maybe, Alexi, where can we direct people who want to find out more about Pollinate or the new name company?
The new Pollinate Group, it's still at www.pollinateenergy.org. So you're catching us right in the middle of the rebrand. I think Google that and you'll come across it. And if you put those articles that Anya and I wrote about why we decided to do this and how we did it for Next Billion, I think they're great, great additional articles for people to read on. But if anyone is serious about merging, whether it's in our sector or not, you know, I'm very passionate about this topic area, and we've now had a lot of great experience through the process, and I would definitely welcome people to reach out to us directly through our web emails. It'll get passed on, just because I think every situation is unique. So our experience won't, you know, you can't follow it word for word and step by step, but I would be interested in helping people navigate that process if they're looking to merge with another partner.
Thank you, Alexi. That's very gracious of you. I think you might get a few people reaching out. But Alexi, thank you so much for coming on. First of all, thanks to Alexi.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Andy. It was so great to talk about our experience.
And Sita, thank you as well. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your perspectives of this merger.
Thank you very much for giving me a chance to put my view as well.
And that was Sita Adhikari and Alexi Seller of Pollinate Energy. Thanks both Sita and Alexi for coming on the show. I hope everyone enjoyed that. Now we've got Emma Collenbrander again from the Global Distributors Collective to give us a little context on this and what it means for the wider last mile distributor market. So welcome back, Emma.
Thanks, Andy. Good to be back.
So what did we learn about the merger between these two organizations that could be helpful to the wider social enterprise community?
So we were keen to profile this particular merger because of a key trend that we're seeing in the last mile distribution sector, which is increasing levels of collaboration and consolidation. to date, distribution companies have tended to operate very much in isolation, and that's partly because they're working in small, often quite remote territories, and it's partly because there just aren't any dedicated forums for distributors to come together and network and identify partnership opportunities and share best practices among themselves. But there is very much a strong willingness on the part of last mile distributors to collaborate. And increasingly, we're seeing our membership entering into strategic partners with other members and with groups of members to create efficiencies, to move into new markets and to reduce risk. So as well as full-on mergers between distributors, which is highlighted by the Pollinate Energy and Empower Generation example that you've just listened to, among last-mile distribution members, we've also got distributors who are working with other distributors to share containers of stock, to share transport to alleviate the logistics burden, and share after-sales service. We've got members who are co-applying for funding so that they can access bigger pots of money than they'd be able to access alone. One of the challenges that we see in this space is that finances struggle with investing in smaller companies because there's high transaction costs with dealing with smaller companies with low sort of ticket sizes. And we're also seeing the emergence of collectives and cooperatives like the Global Distributors Collective. But another example is Sendea Uganda, which is a group of distributors in Uganda that are finding ways to leverage economies of scale by working together and sharing costs. So as Sita and Alexei have highlighted just now, there are absolutely challenges with forging and with managing these kinds of partnerships. But if done right, they can be transformative for distributors, both in terms of efficiency and in terms of impact. In saying that, though, distributors still face enormous challenges, and they're very vulnerable. There's still a really high churn rate in the sector as companies open and close on a semi-regular basis, whether that's due to things like, you know, risk-averse investors or unforeseen policies or regulations that shut distributors out of the market. But we are excited about this trend that we're seeing towards collaboration and consolidation, because we see this as being a key mechanism for the sector to achieve meaningful scale. And it's a real signal that the market is starting to mature. So facilitating these kinds of partnerships is a central goal of the Global Distributors Collective. So hopefully you've been inspired by the case of Pollinate Energy and Empower Generation. It's certainly not the only example of exciting collaboration between last mile distribution companies. So please do get in touch with us at the GDC if you'd like to learn more.
Thanks, Emma. This is really, really great to get this sort of take on this almost saturation, but maybe this stages of consolidation that's happening in the last mile distributor sector, which is likely to follow into many other sectors as well. So really good to get this. I mean, I found it incredibly valuable to get this this tangible strategic and tactical information on this merger between two great organizations. Thanks, Emma, for coming on. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Tune in next week for the third in our three-part series, where we'll showcase a last-mile distributor pivoting to a pay-as-you-go model. That's it. Have a great week.
FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.